Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
I believe that.
Yeah.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I am here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Tuesday, July 14th, 2015. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Oh, what a day. Hey, we're buddies with Iran.
Yeah.
Things never cease to amaze me. My big question is, you'd think that I do think there's some, they have some captives of ours, some Americans over there. You would think that, you know, one of the first things in negotiating, they would have those hostages released. You would think. I mean, hey, Obama traded a deserter for some, you know, high power Al-Qaeda. Yeah, you'd think with the Iran deal going in there, they would be part of the deal to begin with, but because they're Americans. But anyway, those are just my thoughts. Gold's down 290 today at 1155.60. Silver up on that. Can I say that right, Al?
I'm not sure. Go ahead and try again. No.
Down 15 at 1545. We have platinum down 9 at 1029, and along with palladium down 7 at 656. USDX down 0.11 at 96.68. Crude oil up 63 at 52.83. And the paper markets today probably did a little bit of rejoicing with the Iranian oil. It was up 75 points at 18,052. NASDAQ up 33 at 51.04. The S&P up 9 at 21.08. Euro 1.10. 10-year yield 2.40%. And Asian markets, Japan was up 1.5%. Everything else looks moderately quiet for overnight trading. And again, when you're looking at, you know, you have those high numbers in the Dow yesterday and still 75 points up today, you know, most of your 3 months performance for the sector performance, you know, they're all relatively down. And the same ones are up and the same ones are down. So it's just another puzzlement as we all scratch our heads as the world is just fine now.
Well, however, it's interesting. I don't know if it's fine, if it's half empty, half full, or whatever, but it's definitely interesting.
Well, Americans did cut back on their spending in stores and restaurants last month. And, of course, the Commerce Department today says that retail sales fell 0.3% in June. And that was the weakest showing since we've had that very cold February, the month of February, that kept the shoppers indoors.
But see, this is a lot for global warming, Melody. Instead of resisting global warming, we should embrace it, because then we don't have those cold winters that have unpredictable effects on our economy.
But let me finish this. The reversal was much sharper than they projected, so they didn't expect to have this type of a drop from the previous month. And there was a 1% jump in May, although they did revise it down somewhat. But so it shows that the consumer is reining in their spending as we go along. And again, that's just another sign that, and you would think for the, heading into the summer months, people are usually spending a little more freely as they go on vacations and do the things that people do during the summer. We also have an article here, Al, about U.S. small business confidence. That tumbles to a one-year low in June, the lowest level in more than a year. And, again, you would the expectations for the second half of the year seems to be a little tempered with that view. So it'll be interesting to see what consumer confidence shows, if they're continue to feel, that things are great because of the stock market. And, so we'll have to see how that, follows.
You know, we're just going to have to watch and see what reality unfolds here. A lot of people expect something strange is going to happen. Something dramatic is, a lot of people believe it'll happen September, October. Will it? We don't know. We can't. Who can predict this stuff? In fact, you know, we wonder and we keep on, you know, this is, again, it's like one of those movies, those serials that you used to see at the movies years ago. I don't think they do that. It was maybe even before my time as a kid. They used to have weekly series, you know, Flash Gordon and what's his name, Gene Autry and the Video Rangers or whatever it was. And you went to see the movie on Saturday, paid a dime for it to get into the theater, and you could watch the movie, and then there would be a cliffhanger, and next week we could have another episode, and you pay another dime to get in. And they string kids along, and they'd watch these things. We seem to have something like that going on in the global economy. Every week we seem to get closer and closer. We're on a cliffhanger, and then we get saved right at the last. And in the beginning of the next week's movie, we're saved from that cliffhanger, but we end in another cliffhanger, and it just goes on and on and on. Sooner or later, we're going to get to the end of this movie. And sooner or later, there's going to be some sort of a serious problem. You know, we had the two articles that you just mentioned. One about some U.S. small business confidence tumbles to one-year low. That's not a big thing. It's just something. And we had weak U.S. retail sales hint at slower economic growth. All by itself, not a big thing, but it's something. All right? But what they relate to my mind, is another article from Reuters. And the headline is, Europe fails to rid itself of deflation threat. And the main point behind this article is that they're not able to cause inflation. They want inflation. They want 2% inflation. They think 2% is healthy. Germany is only able to, it was up one, prices were up a tenth of a percent. They want 2%. Prices were up a tenth of a percent year to year. They fell 0.2% between May and June. Now, if the prices are that low, we're not getting the inflation they need in Europe. If they fell 0.2% between May and June, that's only 2 months. You can't make a lot out of it. On the other hand, you can make something. It's a leaf in the breeze. It gives us a clue. That's evidence of deflation. And that's what they're complaining about. Italy had prices rise only 0.2%. That's not 2% inflation. It's 0.2% inflation. It's not what they need. It's close to deflation. Britain was unchanged. Prices didn't rise year to year. Sweden, prices are falling at 0.4% annual rate. Falling. That's deflation, folks. The dilemma facing central banks, which are being forced to keep flooding their economies with cash to boost growth and inflation. But the problem is that to date they're getting a relatively little bang for their buck. The same thing happened in this country with quantitative easing 1 and quantitative easing 2 and quantitative easing 3. The fundamental object was to try to cause inflation that would stimulate the economy, because one of the things, a couple of things happened with inflation. Anyone who's bought a house in the last 50 years has been informed by someone in the family or at the bank or someone that you're going to be able to pay off the mortgage with cheaper dollars. And what they mean by that is it will become increasingly easy to pay off the mortgage over the term of that 30-year mortgage because of inflation. Inflation is good for borrowers. All right? If I can borrow $100,000, but in the end I only pay back $90,000 or $80,000 in purchasing power, I'm getting over. I'm essentially robbing the bank. And the bank is saying, we don't mind. We don't mind being robbed. We'll lend it to you anyway, and you're going to beat us with some, thanks to inflation, you'll be paying us back with cheaper dollars. Now, the bank have other banks have other ways of trying to make money off of it, but inflation is good for borrowers. It's bad for lenders. It's bad for savers. If you're saving your money in the bank, you got $100,000 in the bank, thanks to inflation, your $100,000 will be eaten away while it sits there in the bank, unless you have a high interest rate, which right now we're sitting on a zero interest rate. Government wants inflation. They want people to borrow money so they can go out and buy cars and homes and whatever else, flat screen TVs and whatever else, in order to stimulate the economy. The government does not want deflation, because when we have deflation, prices are falling. And the dollar, relatively speaking, or the euro in the European Union, is becoming more valuable. You get more bang for the buck. And people know this. They understand it. And they sit back and say, well, let's see, I could buy myself a used car for $10,000 today, or I could wait on it another 60, 90 days, and I think I could get that same car. Instead of paying $10,000, I think I can get it for $8,000. Now, a lot of people are willing to sit there and say, I will do without the car for the next 3 months in order to save $2,000 on the price. This is the mentality that affects everyone when we go into a period of deflation. Everyone knows prices are falling. Whatever I pay for anything I want to buy today, want to buy a computer, a house, a car, whatever the price is today, it'll be lower a month from now, 6 months from now, a year from now. It'll be lower yet. And so long as that's true, people who have money sit back and say, I won't spend now. I'm going to wait until the prices fall. And they will. Because if we don't spend right now, we don't get out and spend. We're not stimulating the economy. If I don't buy a new house today, if I put it off for 6 months or a year to get a better deal, what happens is I'm putting some people out of business. I'm contributing to more unemployment. As more people are unemployed, they don't have the money to buy anything. If someone wants to sell something, they have to reduce the price to something the unemployed can afford. The people who do have jobs watch their wages go down. Prices, if you got something you want to sell it, you got to sell it at a price even the employed can afford at lower wages. The point is that deflation feeds on itself. And the more deflation we have, just as inflation may stimulate the economy, deflation will take it to the ground. Right? It is a hallmark of economic depressions that we go into periods of monetary deflation where the currency becomes more valuable and prices for virtually everything else diminish. They go down. They're having that problem in Europe. Nobody's even doubting it. We are having the problem relative of deflation. We're having the problem of deflation relative to the U.S. dollar as measured against six foreign currencies, the euro, the euro, the Canadian dollar, the English pound, the Japanese yen, the Swiss kroner, and the Swiss and the Swedish kroner and the Swiss franc. The dollar is becoming more valuable relative to those six foreign currencies. It means that on the international market, the dollar is clearly going into, it's been in a period of deflation on an international level for about the last 15 months. The problem is that the government has tried to maintain 2% inflation on an annual basis throughout most of my lifetime. This has been going on since the end of World War II, basically. Right? Sometimes we had more inflation, but basically they always wanted some inflation. They can't stand deflation. They got to have inflation. It's good for the government because the government, well, it stimulates the economy, raises tax revenues. Good for the government because inflation would allows the government, which is the world's biggest debtor, to repay its debts in cheaper dollars. Government gets over when we have inflation, but government has been unable to cause inflation with quantitative easing one, quantitative easing two, and quantitative easing three. They have kept interest rates at 0% or near zero for most of, what, 6.5, 7 years now. That's never happened ever before in American history. Nothing like that, ever before. And they're maintaining this in order to try, will someone please cause some inflation? And I've talked about this on the program in the past. And I have been confused and bewildered and wondering, what is government doing? They should not be allowing deflation to take place. Right? It's contrary to public policy, economic policy, monetary policy since the end of World War II. Inflate. In the last 15 months, we've seen deflation on the international level, not so much domestically, but on the international level for sure. I've been wondering why. And the idea has just begun to cross my mind. A couple of minutes before the program began today, I think I might understand what's happening here. You know, I don't have evidence, but I am convinced that the government still wants inflation. I am convinced that the government can't get inflation by means of quantitative easing, either by pumping money into the economy or lowering interest rates or whatever they're doing. Doesn't seem to work. So how could we cause inflation if we can't do it with quantitative easing and we can't do it with lowered interest rates? How could we do it? The government could cause the equivalent of inflation by simply announcing, go to bed on Friday night, and when you go to work Monday morning, they announce we've got a brand new currency out here, and the new dollars have been devalued by, let's say, 50% compared to the old values, the old dollars, the ones you're carrying in your pocket right now. Could be 20% they're devalued, could be 50%, could be 80%. But in one moment, it would be possible to reset the value of the dollar in a way that devalued the dollar. They could cause the kind of inflation that Europe is unable to cause, that the United States has been unable to cause, and perhaps stop the deflation, which is a hallmark for most economic depressions. Maybe that's what's coming, and maybe that's why government has been so casual so far. They've been unconcerned. We've had 15 months of deflation, at least on the U.S. dollar index, and government doesn't seem to mind. They're not doing anything about it. No big deal. I'm looking at that. I'm thinking, what is going on here? It doesn't make sense to me until now. Maybe. Pure speculation, pure conjecture, could be wrong, but maybe the government is saying, all right, come September, October, we're going to pull the plug on the dollar, and we're going to devalue it significantly, and we will generate the inflation that we have not been able to generate with quantitative easing 1, 2, and 3. Does that make any sense, Melody?
Well, it possibly could, and I think what makes sense is we're heading into a break right now.
Well, that's one of those, nothing sure, but death and commercials. Taxes are debatable. Commercials are certain. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cedarstrom. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
Have a heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll-free. 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival, and programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
I just want to remind the listeners again today, we have a little pressure on gold and Mint State 64 $20 St. Gaudens. They're up another $5, so they're continuing to gain strength. The $20 gold pieces, and I'm just talking about the $20 gold pieces, Mint State coins, are all up about $5 across the realm of Mint State 61, Mint State 62, Mint State 63, Mint State 64. So, again, these are signs that there's strong buying going on in the markets. and people are looking towards the mint state coins as a way to diversify their portfolios and also to take advantage of the additional protections and profits they might gain from these coins. So we still have the mint state 64, $20 gold piece. I mean, folks, you won't be able to find these prices anywhere less than this. There's one group out there, they're way over $1,600. They're about $1,650. And I shouldn't even be selling these coins at $1,530. I mean, I shouldn't even be doing it. It's like a couple bucks above wholesale. So take advantage of this sale. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188.
All right, Melody, what is, here's something. Okay, what?
Yeah. Huh? Read your notes. We have a caller. We have Mr. Jim.
Jim from West Virginia?
Mr. Jim from West Virginia.
Every once in a while, you fellas are hitting a bunch of points and say, I got to get in on this. About the only advantage of being aware of all this trash for 50 years, as of a couple months ago, is the perspective, good and bad. We know the government speaketh out of both sides of its mouth, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember half a century ago, every week or so would come out on the news, oh, the price of steel went up another penny a pound, causing our inflation. And at the same time, I knew, because I read things like Kiplinger magazine, it was a long time ago, but I knew that the Federal Reserve rules, regulations, whatever the hell, operating practices, policy standards, whatever the heck they run by, they would say, oh, every dollar that the government borrows, that's money out of the economy that suppresses the economy. So we're going to print $13 for every dollar the government borrows. I mean, this is the kind of trash that's been going on. The truth of the matter is, so the Federal Reserve people get richer. Now, okay, now I've got a big point about inflation now. Alfred, everything you and Melody say about inflation, deflation is 100% true. Okay, not taking from that one iota. But there's another factor. Government says, oh, we need inflation because it helps our exports.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it helps exports. It's economic development. No, so they get richer. Now, here's the truth of the matter. If they think that inflation helps exports, why in the H is it that two-thirds of the price of any manufactured goods, product of heavy industry, is made of taxes?
Yeah.
Now, you talk about real inflation. Currency inflation, and of course, I've just given two stories about that, which, you know, BS stories here over the years. But you tell me why it is that whenever you buy something from heavy manufacturing in America, two-thirds of the cost of that darn thing is what's called tax overhead. Because when you have a business, if you pay out 10% taxes, well, that's a 10% overhead. But you see, you got to understand, when you're in a business, everything you buy has already been taxed. That shows up in the prices. So what it boils down to is two-thirds of something other is taxes. Now, let's look at that real careful. That means if you're a customer, that means that two-thirds of every dollar, you know, you come home, you pay checks, some guy sticks a gun in your face and says, give me two-thirds of it. Okay, let's look at it that way. Keep in mind, a criminal, somebody takes control of that which is not his. But let's say you're a manufacturer. Okay, you're sitting there and you get slammed with all these taxes. Okay, so basically, if taxes consume two-thirds, that means the real cost of production is one-third the price. That means everything costs three times as much, and that isn't even figuring in rules and regulations, the burden of that. So basically, if you're running two-thirds of a tax load, that means that everything costs three times cost of production. Now, you tell me how that helps our economy, and that helps exports.
So it's killing us. When I was a kid, I called up the library. I've told this story before, but this goes back into the 90s. I wrote an article on this. It was before the Internet, which is hard to believe. I think it was invented sometime before the wheel, is the way it seems in my mind. We always had the Internet. The wheel, that came later. But before we had the internet, if you wanted information, you could call the Dallas Public Library and you could ask them, and they'd send somebody down, run through the books, and they'd come back with information you were looking for, an article. And the rest. I asked them how many people, what percentage of the American people had jobs back in 1950 when I was a little boy, and the answer was about 30%. And what was the percentage of people who had jobs today? It was back then, and I was asking in 1990, it was about 55%. Now, how the government says they're doing a wonderful thing by creating more jobs for us, and we should just, you know, line up to kiss their backsides because we have created more jobs. The reason we have more people working today than we had back then is because back then the taxes were so low, one man working could afford to support a wife and one or two kids. They have raised taxes to where the average man right now is probably only taking home, I don't know, perhaps as low as 20 cents, but at least no more than 35, 40 cents out of every dollar he earns is actually being spent by him. The other 55, 60 cents is going into taxes. You don't have as much, and because the government has raised taxes, women have to go to work. They don't get to go to work. So, oh, you come a long way, baby. All right, you may remember some of the, women have been liberated then to go get jobs. Yeah, because we taxed the man almost into oblivion. And so we said, all right, now it takes two people today to generate the same standard of living that my father could generate back in 1950 when we were the richest country on earth. We were the number one lender to the world. Now we're the biggest debtor. And we have the biggest debt. We are arguably, if that debt was ever enforced, we might be the poorest people on the planet. So all I'm trying to say is I'm agreeing with what you're saying, and the consequences of raising taxes and raising taxes and raising taxes has been to impoverish the American people, to put our families under great strain. Principal cause of divorce in this country is economic stress. Who's the principal source of economic stress? Government. They take more than half the money you make. They're the primary source of economic stress, and it all, just one thing flows from another. While we have big government who claim they are doing so much for so many, and the truth is we are being gutted by big government. And I'm sure you understand that, Jim, and I doubt that there's much that I said there that you don't agree with, but go ahead.
I agree with 100% of it. Mm-hmm. And the simple truth of the matter is this. We are being attacked on all corners, and the excuse which they give is, the reason they give for everything is an excuse. It's just that simple. Now, I'm going to mention one other little point here for whatever reasons. One of the hardest things I've had to do to get through to people who have never had a business of their own is the fact that there are so many taxes which go right into the final price. Business taxes are the most punitive. Matter of fact, capital gains taxes, which is basically seed money, capital gains taxes are even most punitive. John F. Kennedy. Okay, supposed to be liberal, you know, war on poverty sort of thing, etc. Okay, he was smart economically because you got to pay for this stuff somehow. One of the things he did was he chopped the daylights out of the capital gains tax, and that staved off a tremendous depression, recession in America back in the 60s. So, folks, anybody who knows anything about economics, I don't give a dang about your politics, left, right, or in the middle. This is all about economics, who benefits, and John F. Kennedy, thank God, was smart enough to see that capital gains taxes were the most punitive of all. Second behind that is business taxes. Because whenever you tax a business, that means that exports go down, baby. Because you can't sell your goods overseas if they cost three times as much as another one. I thank you for letting me have your platform, folks.
Hi, Jim. Thank you. You know, one of the things about it is I am not convinced that we need to worry about exporting our products to foreign countries.
We don't make it.
I think that's exaggerated. I think the need for exports is exaggerated. We have potentially the largest and most important market in the whole world is in the 50 United States. I don't understand why, if I'm running a little factory down here in Dallas, I need to worry about selling my whatever it is I'm making, my widgets. I don't need to. Why do I need to sell them to Peking? Why can't I sell them to South Dakota or Maine or Florida or someplace. Why do I have to worry about selling? Why do I have to compete in that market in China? I can understand that if you want to compete, okay, but to me, high tariffs will just keep this right within the family here, the United States of America, and I'll make computers, and Frank can make TV sets, and Melody, you can sell gold coins, and whatever we're going to do here. And we don't. I'm not convinced that we need the exports the way a lot of people, the government's, oh, we got to export. I don't believe it. It may be helpful, but I don't think it's critical. What was the other point I was going to make? Jim was talking about, he didn't care whether you're a liberal or conservative. And he's right. I was thinking about this just the other day. The problem is not that the government is in the extreme communist or in the extreme fascist. The problem is not that the government is liberal or the government is conservative. Right? They fly under these flags and say, hey, we're the government and we're communists. Well, from my perspective, that's a bad thing. That's a dumb thing. But so is fascism. So is the extreme right. What is wrong is not the philosophy that the government flies under. What is wrong is the size of government. I don't care what you've got. If you've got a big communist government, you're in trouble. You got a big fascist government, you're in trouble. You got a big conservative government, you're in trouble. You got a big liberal government, you're in trouble. The problem is big government. It is not the government's philosophy, the political philosophy. That's incidental. And where I'm going with this is if we are going to have, if insofar as we live in a world where we think government's going to solve all our problems, and government promises to solve our problems, and government promises to take care of us, and insofar as we accept those promises and we become dependents on government, that's what kills this country. And I don't care whether it's communist or fascist or whatever. The communists killed the Soviet Union. The fascists killed Nazi Germany. But the common denominator was big government. It's not about whether you're fascist, you're communist, you're conservative, you're liberal. Do you think, as a liberal, we need more government? You're helping to destroy this country. Do you think, and the liberal comes in, well, we got to help the poor. I'm not convinced that's true. I think the poor can be helped at the local level. And it should be that way rather than the federal government picking up the obligation to pick up the poor. But the conservatives come in and say, we don't need to help the poor, but we do need to subsidize the rich. Then again, I'm saying that's crazy talk. We don't need to subsidize anybody at the federal level. That's something government does. It gets them elected and reelected and so on. And it's something we seem to accept and enjoy as people. But in the end, it's the reason we have this enormous debt. Because big government said, oh, we can do all sorts of things. We can fight wars all over the world. We can give welfare to everybody who's poor. We can invite the illegal aliens in. We don't have to be reasonable. We don't have to be responsible. We're being destroyed by big government. Not liberal government, not conservative government, not fascist government, not communist government. Big, big, big. And the whole idea behind the Constitution, the original Constitution, was limited government, which means small. That was the foundation on which we rose to, I don't know, the world's number one superpower. We became the most prosperous nation on earth, and it was based largely on having a limited government. But particularly since the 1930s and the New Deal, the concept of limited government has been lost, and government is supposed to solve be all things to all people and kiss all of our boo-boos and tuck us in at night and rest that. And we've lost the independence that's necessary to keep this country afloat. And maybe we'll regain that independence. We might regain it voluntarily, but I don't think so. You know, you go talk to people that are receiving checks from the government, say, well, yeah, I believe those other people shouldn't get checks, but I should get mine. You know, how many people are, you know, the military, they make weapons and bombs, they're in favor of the fascists. the welfare community is in favor of the liberals, and they want more money for the people who are living in poverty. Who's going to voluntarily agree to give up their checks? And the answer is almost no one. Everyone wants more. And as a result, we can't stop paying those other people, but I need the money. You know, I need the money bad, so you got to give the money to me. We will continue to suckle at the government teat until the whole thing collapses, and all of a sudden we have to be weaned, whether we want to or not, and learn how to survive in the world on our own. And then we might regain the kind of mentality, the independent mentality, maybe, where we can rebuild this country and do something powerful with it, something important, something valuable to everyone. But it's going to require people to get away from this notion that government is our savior. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Financial obligations or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. What's next, Melody?
Well, you know, you talked about how the people, you know, maybe they'll wake up. You know, certainly there are no politicians, I believe, that will pull us through. But this makes interesting conversation. Anyway, today there was a USA Today poll that showed that Donald Trump was taking the lead over the rest of the Republican field. He surged to the top of the field,
yep.
But he's still the weakest competitor against, supposedly, the GOP.
Hillary.
And it's like, I don't buy that.
I don't either.
He could wipe her up in a... However, I do believe if Trump continues, wants to be considered seriously, I think he does need to perhaps show sometimes a little bit of a presidential
demeanor.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, he gets a little, he likes to play the I don't know. He kind of parodies himself at times.
Mm-hmm.
And he does the you're fired routine and the rest of that sort of thing. He's a little theatrical.
Yes.
All right. And I agree, that's a problem.
Yes.
And whether that's going to come to bite him in the buns or not, what remains to be seen. It probably will. Now, whether it'll bite him, but whether or not it actually makes him bleed, we'll watch and see. He can probably handle it. If he fails to handle it, he could be laughed out of the race under certain circumstances. But my guess is he's going to stay in it. He's got the money to make the difference. And he's got to be changing. How many Republicans do we have running? How many Republican candidates do we have right now?
16 or 17 now.
I understand. There's got to be 2, 3, 5 of them that are sitting back and saying, you know, if I want to get in this race, I got to start taking this as serious as Trump does. I've got to start calling a spade a spade. Because that's what's moving the public. And maybe Trump can be put off to the side. But if he is, he's going to be replaced by someone else who at least speaks bluntly.
Well, let me put
the campaign.
Whether they'll
live up to it later on remains to be seen. But you know,
well, I think what is truly happening is the media is playing him, and he's falling into it. And I think with the headlines that he's getting, they're beating him, and it's like, well, aren't you supposed to be smart enough not to fall into, you know, their little web here, that you should be able to dodge it and promote yourself? I mean, who are these guys? All of these politicians, they get to these levels to where they're leading the batch, and it's like, well, who in the heck are your handlers? What are they telling you to do? And are you ignoring them to that degree that you're falling into this media game? Because while they're doing this and he thinks he's leading now, they're just there to destroy him. And
no,
that's exactly what they're doing.
Leading. I think he's legitimately leading. I don't
The media will destroy him.
I don't doubt, given the opportunity, that they will try to knock him down. That's their business, practically. But,
I mean, just like this. Like,
yeah,
just,
but look
like
what
this.
He's done. I don't know if he intended to capitalize on his bluntness to the extent that he has. But he got into this, and he opened his mouth about one thing or another, and all of a sudden he started to surge. Perhaps he might be as surprised by his success as any of the rest of us are. He may have said, holy cow, all I got to do is go out and tell the truth to these people, and they're ready to vote for me. I mean, it's who's playing who right now?
No, I didn't.
The media wants him to behave like a normal politician, the rest of that sort of thing.
Not how they're playing him.
Well, I understand.
They're
giving him enough rope right now, but he is taking that rope, and maybe he's going to hang himself, and maybe he's weaving a net to capture them before this is all over. This is at least interesting, and from my perspective, you know, I'm hooray for Trump. He's changing the tone of the election in ways that the Republican hierarchy can't control. All right? And that's good. Yay. Hooray.
Well, I agree. I mean, I agree. And I hope he at least perhaps, I mean, just like this, you know, the criminal that escaped prison.
El Chapo. Yep.
I mean, you know, really... You really believe threats are coming from him? Because I mean, come on. Let's get serious.
Let's get serious. I want to start an organization of Mexican drug lords against Donald Trump.
I want to.
Mexican drug lords.
Hey.
I mean, it's just a thing. The guy is helping Trump. I'm surprised Trump didn't pay him. Say, listen, if you'll send a tweet that's critical about me, I think we can get another 100,000, 200,000 votes, whatever.
He needs to start talking about other things other than just Mexico
He's caught in a situation where he walks into the room and who's going to ask him about the Iranian deal? Where they can see if he's going to say something else outrageous about the Mexicans.
Well, that's where he needs to change, and that's where he needs to control more than allow them to control him. And don't get me wrong. I mean, you're right. I think absolutely. I think it's probably one of the best things that could happen to this election to bring him on. What I really want to see is how he behaves during a debate. That'll be interesting.
Well, it'll be interesting, but he's not going to be intimidated.
Absolutely.
I think he's going to make problems for the others. You know, you can sit back and say this is going to be interesting to see how Trump reacts. But, you know, in most of these debates, what's the one thing you can't do? And the answer is you can't show fear, you can't show confusion. All right. If the other guys can push you around, you look weak, you lose the debate. I don't care how smart you are. You're going to lose the debate if the big boys appear to push you around. You're going to lose this thing in political circumstances. I don't think they're going to be able to push Trump.
No, they can't.
I don't think they can push him, and I don't think he's going to look weak in debate. I don't think you're going to catch him where he just, he has nothing to say. So I'm looking forward to it. This is going to be, I don't know that it's going to save the country. I don't know what's going to happen. I'm saying at least this is going to be an election. As long as Trump is around, this is going to be an election that it's going to be fun to watch.
I agree. I don't think he's going to save the country or anything else. But, a lot of people that I talk to, when we talk about the election, they tell me, they says, you know what, I'm just tired of the same old people.
Yeah, I know.
He's new. He's actually refreshing.
Yeah.
He has passion.
Yeah.
He has passion with what he talks.
Yeah.
And he's right. And they agree with him. And so they says, yeah. And they'll say, my spouse thinks I'm crazy for wanting to vote for Trump. He's going to vote against him and so forth. But it's interesting to see how people have voiced their support for him already.
I know. I mean, I heard that he was up. He had surged above Jeb Bush.
He has.
Yeah. So I'm assuming he's got about 20% of the prospective voters. 2022, I don't know where the poll is exactly, but he's in an excess
17%. Jeb,
he has 17%.
Jeb is 14%.
And he's fallen. Jeb was at 19%. Then Jeb has lost ground. And
of course, I can't even believe he's got that much.
But out of, you know, that's a big.
Well, you had Scott Walker come into the race yesterday, and that took those points away.
But you've got 16, 17 Republicans who are taking a shot at this thing. Which means the average guy has got maybe 6%. And if Trump is pulling down 17-19% right now, he's way ahead of everybody. And it's going to be difficult to unseat him. It's not going to be impossible, but they're going to have to get him pretty soon if they want to take him out of the campaign. He's liable to establish such a commanding lead that it's going to take someone who's going to have to do something really intelligent and dramatic in debates in order to unseat him.
On
the primaries, you know.
His competition is Scott Walker. I don't think it's Ben Carson. I don't think it's Rand Paul. I don't think it's, you know, I don't believe it's Ted Cruz. But I think Scott Walker from Wisconsin, yeah, I think he's got he just made his announcement yesterday, and he's ahead of them all. You know, I mean, he's third, and he has that polished, but yet he's shown as a fighter and working on, you know, bringing Wisconsin around and standing up to a lot of the heavy hitters in Wisconsin. So, you know, he has a little bit of a record, and, you know, so I would think Scott Walker would be Trump's biggest competitor. But
it might be, but
if they're Republican, they like Scott Walker.
I agree with that, but he looks the part. I'll give you that.
Yes.
He looks like he was sent down from central casting. All right?
Yep.
But how old is he? Do you know?
No, I don't. Not off the top of my head.
You only have to be 35 to be president, if I understand and recall correctly. And that goes back. That was a meaningful number when the Constitution was drafted.
47
years ago. When he's 47 now.
47.
Yeah, it's reasonable. But you know, the truth of the matter is, I don't think you're fit to be president until you're at least 60 years old.
Mm-hmm, I agree.
I know a lot of people would sit back and say, oh, you've got to let the young people in. These young men running, they don't know anything other than how to chase their secretaries around the desk. All right? I don't think this is an important job, and it's not something that should just be handed over to whoever looks like he missed it. He should have gone to Hollywood rather than to Washington. There's something here, and you've got to be around for a while, and it changes. You know, I would have thought in my own, you know, egotistical way that, well, I was fit to be president years ago. No, I wasn't. You know, a lot of people think that. You know, you get the, oh, yeah, if I was president, I'd do this. You know, I wasn't fit to be president. You got to put some years on.
Was Kennedy fit?
Since I don't know that he was. I don't know that he was. You know, Kennedy, you know, on one level, we never got a complete. Kennedy did some great things and potentially great things. But he was also wasting his time with Marilyn Monroe and God knows who else. I mean, this guy, if he had lived, we have an opinion of Kennedy right now that's based in large measure on the fact that he died relatively young. And he died before he was able, he had enough time in office to make a complete ass out of himself. You give him enough time, he might have come off like Bill Clinton before this, before his administration was over. We tried to glorify these people when they have, it's, I don't mean this, take this in the wrong way, but in a sense, from a historical point of view, he had the good fortune to be assassinated before anybody could find out what he was really all about. Now, I know, I don't mean to antagonize people by saying good fortune. I use that term just to try to illustrate. We don't really know who John F. Kennedy was. I appreciate him a great deal more than I did at the time. I mean, I was a big-time Republican back then. I didn't know anything about it, but I thought I was a Republican. You know, over the years, I've come to appreciate John F. Kennedy and some of his speeches in particular. I mean, I don't know what he did, but he did deliver in what he accomplished, per se. But he delivered some extraordinary speeches. And I don't know that he wrote them himself, but he had the good sense to hire people with brains enough to write really intelligent, passionate, moving speeches. Humorous, rest of it, a brilliant orator. So, I don't know. But I'm still saying, you know, I'm not saying that you can't. 35 is too young to be president. You don't have enough character. You can't possibly. I don't know that any man can know enough to be president. You have to know foreign policy, domestic policy, and what are they doing in Congress, and what are they doing in the Senate, and you know, what are the courts up to, and the rest of this sort of thing. Can any man really master the job? Is anyone really fit to hold that office anymore?
You know, well, that's a good question. How many of these guys have even been in the military? I mean, you're right. As far as foreign policy, I mean, look at the guy that's in there now. Look at the ones that have been there in the past. Sure, the Bushes were in the military, but, you know.
The National Guard.
Exactly. I mean, they didn't have any, they really
like
don't have any. You get, look at Clinton. I mean, none of these ex-presidents have, you know, they didn't have any experience.
Well, I can tell you one of the problems is that we used to have, we won't have enough time to get into it right now, maybe we'll do it tomorrow, but it goes to the difference between these open primaries and nominating candidates out of the smoke-filled rooms that they used to use back prior to the 1960s, I think is about the time they changed and went to wide open primaries. It changed the kind of candidates that run for the president. We have people who make a good appearance on the TV, they get to be president, and the people really know something, they're the ones that would have made it through the smoke-filled rooms, but if they're not, they don't have that TV persona, forget it, you're not going. We're out of time, Melody. I want to thank all you people for listening. Melody and I will be back. Will we both be back tomorrow, Melody? I think you're off today. Tomorrow.
I'm not sure.
I'll be back tomorrow. with Wendy Wilson from Apothecary Herbs. And in the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
All night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. In my dream, I have a plan. If I got me a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work at all. Money, always funny.